All right, Jebusai, good morning. Let us begin. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors, Baruch Hashem, a number of sponsors this morning. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Nisan, Frank and Debbie Spector, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month with deep gratitude to the entire Kehillah. To thank Paul and Kathy Pollack for dedicating the also Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Nisan in memory of Paul's father, Shmuel ben Zechariah, Paul's mother, Sara Bas Avram, and great-grandmother, Tzirel Bas Reb Dov. To thank our Week of Learning sponsors, Mordechai and Malki Tusk, in honor of Bryna's marriage to Aryeh Nirenberger on Tuesday, in the merit of our learning, may they be showered with all of the Sheva Brachos and all the beautiful Brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Ba'asamo in his storehouses above. We also thank Richard and Judy Noodleman for dedicating this morning's shir in commemoration of the yard site of Richard's other, Ignacio Maskov, Nachman ben Avram. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamos have an aliyah and the families in Nechama. And one more sponsorship to thank the Langer Mishpacha for dedicating the week of learning this week as a Zechusa Refuah Shalema for Yisrael Zev Ben Malko and Sarah Fega Bas Bela Sasya. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamas will have an Aliyah, all of those who have a Refuah, who need a Refuah, will have one together with Kol Chole Yisrael, and Halavai the Chasin and Kala should be gemenched for many years together. And Abosi, with that, let us begin today's daf. A beautiful daf. So remember again, last night was very excited for those of you who were able to join us for the daf last night. I think it was our first ever Matzi Shabbos daf, which was very special and very beautiful. So we're continuing in that sugya today. We're picking up, today's daf is Chaf Gimel 23, and we are picking up on Chaf Beis and Beis 22b, the last line. Tashmos, if you remember, Gennabos, we left off last night with the interesting machlokis considering hadlacha osa mitzvah or hanocha osa mitzvah. What is it that affects the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? Is it halacha lamaisi, the act of kindling, when you actually kindle the menorah, or is it the placement of the menorah down in its designated location? So the Gemara didn't resolve that machlokis. Tashma, the Rosh Hashanah lady, Ashoshis, top of Chaf Gimel. Ashoshis shahisa dolekes vaholekes kol hayom kulo. If you have an Ashoshis, now Rashi points out, if your Ashoshis, kli godol shel zechuchis, this was a very large glass utensil, bela'az lanterna, a lantern. If you have a lantern, shayse dolekes v'olachas kol yom kulo matzi Shabbos mechaba matliko. So we'll say, so this is on Shabbos Chanukah. So let's say erev Shabbos Chanukah, you went ahead and you lit a lantern. You kindled a lantern for Ner Chanukah. Comes matzi Shabbos. Let's say it's still lit. So what's the halacha? You have to extinguish it and relight it in order to fulfill your mitzvah of hadlakas Ner Chanukah. To which the Gemara says, Bishlama hadlaka ose mitzvah shapir. So if you say that it's the act of kindling that makes the mitzvah, then this makes sense. All you need to do is extinguish it and relight it, and that's enough. Ele'i amrit hanocha ose mitzvah. But if halacha lamaisi, you say hanocha ose mitzvah, that placement of the menorah is part of the mitzvah, hay mechabe umadlika, it's not just enough to extinguish it and to kindle it. Rather, what do you need? Mechabe umagbiha umanicha umadlika. Then you would have to extinguish it, lift it up, put it back down, and rekindle it. Because the kindling by itself is not enough. Rather, ultimately, again, you need a hanacha, a placement for mitzvah as well. To which the words va'od, furthermore, need to come of archinon. Asher ki disham zosav v'tzivano lahadlik ner shel Chanukah, shmamina hadlaka osa mitzvah. So we'll say furthermore, look at the text, look at the wording of the bracha itself. The verbiage of the bracha is lahadlik ner shel Chanukah, which tells us that the mitzvah of ner Chanukah is the hadlaka. Right? It doesn't say asher ki disham zosav v'tzivano lahaniach ner shel Chanukah, to place ner shel Chanukah. It says lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. So you see from here that the essence of the mitzvah is the hadlaka, is the kindling itself. To which the Gemara says, shmamina. Indeed, see that that is correct. That halacha lemaaseh, Rabbosai, bottom line is, hadlaka osa mitzvah. Hadlaka osa mitzvah. V'hashta darminan hadlaka osa mitzvah. And now the Gemara says, now that we've learned definitively that it is the act of kindling that affects the mitzvah, Hidlika cheresh shote vekatan lo asa velo klum. Therefore, you see from here that what? That if a cheresh, remember again, is a deaf mute. So katan, shota, is someone who's insane, lacks mental capacity. Or katan, or a minor, if they were to go ahead and kindle the menorah, lo asa velo klum. So we'll say, now that we say hadlako is a mitzvah, the kindling is what affects the mitzvah, if someone who doesn't have halachic capacity goes ahead and does so, they have not fulfilled the mitzvah. To which, so we'll say, so first of all, just before we go on, if you look at Tosis says, Shmamina hadlakos a mitzvah, the imkain, mutter lahadlik miner lener. So we'll say, now that we see hadlakos a mitzvah, the act of kindling is the mitzvah, we already spoke about this last night. But halacha lemaisa, you can light from one ner Chanukah to another ner Chanukah. Now remember, as we mentioned last night, the halacha is madlikin miner lener, is you can light directly from one ner to another ner. You can't use an intermediary like wood chip, was the example of the Gemara. But madlikin miner lener, because halacha also says, but look what Tosa says, miko makom, kevan shenagu ha'olam lahachmir, ein l'shanos ha'minag. Interestingly enough, Tosa says, our minag is, we do not light from one ner to another. Shabbos says, this is actually a very interesting corollary to last night's shir. Even though the way we concluded is that hadlaka osa mitzvah, and therefore, or I should say, madlikim miner lener, you are permitted to light from one candle to another, Tosas clearly tells us, this is not the minag. This is not generally what we do. Again, it's good to know if you're stuck for some reason, you do have the ability to go ahead and utilize this halakha of madlikin miner lener, but halakha lemaisa, it's not the ideal. But I will say, but it does come out that halakha osem mitzvah, that an act of kindling, the act of kindling is in and of itself what affects the mitzvah. I will say, means as follows. It means that in order to be yotzei the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, all of the necessary ingredients for a proper hadlaka must be present at the moment of kindling. So the menorah must be placed in the correct location. The necessary amount of oil must be there at the time that you kindle. You can't, for example, put in a little bit of oil, light it, and then add the rest of the oil later on. Hadlaka osa mitzvah means that at the moment of the hadlaka, that's when you fulfill the mitzvah. So everything you need for a proper hadlaka must be there at that time. The Gemara says, let's say, just say something very beautiful. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berdichev, Schuso Yogin Alinu, says something so beautiful. I've mentioned this many, many times in the past. So the Rebbe says that Hadlaka Ose Mitzvah is not just a din by Ner Chanukah. It's a din by all of Yiddishkeit, by all of Judaism. That Hadlaka Ose Mitzvah, it's only if you're on fire, it's only if you're passionate, it's only if you bring energy to something. That's osa mitzvah. A person could go through their life with their Yiddishkeit, and it's blah. You know, I'm checking the boxes, I'm doing what I have to do, and that's fine. I discharge my obligations. I fulfilled a halachic mandate. But do you want to know what really makes Yiddishkeit Yiddishkeit? Do you want to know what makes your mitzvah a mitzvah? It's hadlaka osa mitzvah. It's when you're fiery, it's when you're passionate, it's when you're excited about something. That's what truly makes the mitzvah a mitzvah. So the Gemara goes on, Isha vadei madliga. So we'll say women certainly could light Ner Chanukah. Dam Rabbi Shimon Levi, Nashim chayavos b'Ner Chanukah, sha'af hinayu ba'osa nesu. Rabbi Shimon Levi says, women are definitely obligated in Ner Chanukah. Why? Because they were also included in the miracle. So what does this mean that they were included in the miracle? So if you look at Rashi says over here, Hayu ba'osaneis shegazru yivanim al kol besulos hanesulos li ba'al litaf sartchila va'ayad isha na'asaneis. So Rashi says it very interesting over here. Rashi says, Afim Hayu ba'osaneis means that there was a specific decree. If you look at the Megillas Hashmonaim, so interestingly enough, there were a series of decrees that were leveled by the Syrian Greeks. The one that kind of broke the straw that broke the camel's back was when they legislated that a Jewish woman on her wedding night must spend her wedding night with the local Greek governor. That is what led a brave young girl by the name of Yehudis, who was the daughter of Matisyo, to go ahead, it's a longer story, not for now, but to essentially kill the Greek governor. That act of defiance is what sparked the Hashmonai rebellion. So Rashi says over here, Af Hinei Ba'osanes means, First of all, there was a specific gzeira against women, and it was in fact a woman who really gave the rest of the Chasha and the Maccabim the ability to go ahead and rebel against the Syrian Greeks. Therefore, we'll say women are chayavos in Ner Chanukah. A lot of interesting discussion about the idea, does this mean that women should light their own menorah? Is the idea that a woman is yotzei with her husband or girls with their father? Okay, so there's a lot of discussion about that in the postgame. Not for now. Amar Rav Sheshes, Ach Sonoi Chai B'Ner Chanukah. Interesting halacha. If you are a guest by someone's house, ultimately, again, you are chayiv in Ner Chanukah. So we'll say, now, the novelty of this is as follows. Normally, we're going to develop this point more, Ner Chanukah is a din and a bias. Ner Chanukah is an obligation in the home. It's not a chiyuv gavra, it's a chiyuv on the home. So therefore, I might have thought that if I'm traveling and not at home, maybe I have no obligation of Ner Chanukah. Kamash Rolon, the Gemara says that if you're a guest in someone's home, where you are a guest, that is your new home. So because that's your new home, you have a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah in that new place. Amr Bizira said, So Rabbi Zera said, when I was a younger man, actually what it really means you're going to see is when I was a single man and I was a guest in someone's home. So if I was somewhere on Chanukah night, I would give my host a couple of dollars, or really literally a couple of pennies, and I would buy into his oil. I don't have to light my own menorah. I buy in, I give him some money towards his hadlaka, and that's how I would fulfill my obligation. But after I got married, I realized I don't have to do this. Why? Because when I was traveling, and Rashi points out that Rabbi Zera would still be away even after he got married, there would be times where he would be away because of his learning. So he said, I no longer have to give money to my host. Why? Because my wife is lighting for me in my home. And I will say, this is an incredible halacha. So now that, and this is in fact halacha lamaisa on two levels. So first of all, if you're going to be a guest at someone's home, this happens often Shabbos Chanukah. People go to Shabbos Chanukah, you're staying at your host's home, you don't have to light your own menorah. I mean, you can light your own menorah if you want to, but sometimes the host does, sometimes just too many menorahs being lit. No obligation to do that. Instead, what you can do is you give the host a dollar, you buy into his hadlaka, you acquire essentially a portion of his oil, and you fulfill your obligation with his act of kindling. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two is that you are yotze with the kindling that occurs in your home, even if you are not home. So halacha lamaisa, if a person is going ahead and traveling, they're away from home, but someone is home, whether it's his wife or his children, someone of legal capacity is lighting at home. On a technical level, I can go ahead and be yotze with that hadlaka in my home. So we'll say this comes up all the time, get the shots every year, with somebody, let's say, traveling, and often traveling for business. They're staying in a hotel. Most hotels maintain a general policy that they don't want you lighting fires in the room. So then the shaila becomes, what should I do l'gabei Ner Chanukah? So a person doesn't need to stress. As long as there's someone in your home who's going ahead and kindling the Ner Chanukah, you fulfill the obligation that way. And this goes back to the central idea that Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, is not a din in the gavra. It's not an obligation on the individual, but rather it's a din in the cheftza. It's an obligation on the bias, on the home. So as long as there is a Chanukah candle being kindled in the home, wherever I am, I fulfill my obligation. Good. Rabbi Shimon Levi, Kalashman and Kulan Yafin Lener. So we'll say, Rabbi Shimon Levi says as follows: All oils are proper for the Ner. Proper for kindling, for shemen zayis min amuvchar, but ultimately it's supposed to be Ner Chanukah. But shemen zayis, but olive oil is most preferred. So you could use any oil that burns well for Ner Chanukah, but shemen zayis is the preferable oil. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abayi Meish have a mahader mar an mishchad shum shemin." So Abayi says, originally I used to really try to find sesame oil. Why sesame oil? Amar hay mashich nuhurei tvei, because apparently sesame oil burns very well. The oil is drawn to the wick very well, so it burns very well. Kevan deshamale la lahadra Yeshua ben Levi mahadra an mishcha dezesa. But now, after I heard this halacha of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that in fact olive oil is preferable, so I try to go ahead and use olive oil. Good. Amar haitzal on the horitfei. because ultimately, apparently, olive oil burns a little bit clearer. The flame itself is a little bit clear. Okay. Varmi Rishon Levi, Kalashman Miyafim Dios. We'll say similarly again, Rishon Levi said, and we'll say, we know that is halacha lemaisa. Really, technically, you could use anything that burns for Ner Chanukah. Remember again, even going back to the beginning of this parak, even though Ner Shabbos has certain limitations as to what you can use, Ner Chanukah does not have those limitations. Nevertheless, Shemen Zayis, olive oil, is mitzvah min amufchar, is most preferable. Now, the truth is, that's for two reasons. That's because, number one, it burns well, and also, number two, because remember, that's Zeicher L'Neis. The miracle occurred with olive oil, so certainly, again, if possible to have olive oil, that's preferable. Rabbi Shimon Levi says another thing. Kol Hashmanim Yafin L'Dio, V'Shemen Zayis min amufchar. All oils are good for the production of ink, but apparently olive oil is best. So what does that mean? Legabel o la'ashim. Does that mean that it's good ultimately to knead for ink or to smoke? Now, Rashi actually points out something very interesting. The way they used to make ink is as follows. They would take glass and they would burn a fire by the glass. The soot would accumulate on the glass. They would scrape off the soot, mix it with oil, and they would go, that would create like a congealed ink substance. That would then be mixed with other things to create a liquid ink. So now when Rabbi Shimon Levi says that olive oil is best for the production of ink, what is he referring to? Is he saying that you should take the soot and knead it with olive oil? Or is he saying that the fire that you use to produce with soot, that soot should be generated with smoke that is made from olive oil? That's the Shaila. So the Gemara says, Tashma d'tanei bishon bar sutra, kol hashmanim yafalim dio, all oils are good for the production of ink. V'shemen zayis minam avchar, but olive oil is best, bein l'kabel, bein l'ashen. And the answer is both. It is best to use olive oil to produce the soot, as well as to go ahead and knead with the soot in order to go ahead and produce ink. Beautiful. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra Masni Hachi. Rav Shmuel bar Zutra, he had a different girsa. His girsa was, Kol ha'ashanim yafin l'dio, any type of smoke, right, which is to produce soot on the glasses, on the glass, all of that works for dio, for the production of ink. The Shemen Zayis min ha'mufchar. But ultimately, again, if you can make a fire with olive oil to produce the smoke, which then produces the soot, that is even more ideal. Okay, Amar Rav Huna kol hasrafin liyafin l'dio. The sraf cut off yafe mikulam. Rav Huna says, Rav Huna says, machlokes Rashi Tosas over here. Rashi says over here that ultimately cut off refers to some type of gum. Tosas says it doesn't refer to gum, but rather again, Tosas says it's lachluchis shal ilan. It's actually right across in the middle of that Tosas kol hasrafin. He says lachluchis shal ilan. So Tosa says it's some type of sap. So Rashi understands that there is some type of gum. Tosa understands there is some type of sap. Visarav cutoff yafamikulam. And apparently, again, this cutoff sap or this cutoff dung is considered to be the best item to go ahead and produce ink. Good. Amrim chibarashi, Amrav. Hamadlik, brother, so back to Chanukah. Hamadlik near Shal Chanukah. Tzarech levarich. It's a very interesting halacha. So if one goes ahead and kindles the Chanukah candles, right? You kindle your menorah, you have to make a bracha. Rabbi Yisrael will say, that's okay, that's no chiddush there. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar, haroa ner shel Chanukah tzarech levarech. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, even if you see the ner Chanukah. Rabbi will say, this is quite a dramatic halacha. So what Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi is saying that when you kindle the menorah, you have to make a bracha. Rabbi Yirmiyah is coming along and saying, not only when you kindle it, but even if you just see the Ner Chanukah. Now, what this is referring to over here is, I'm walking, I pass by your house, and I see your Ner Chanukah. Rabbi Yirmiyah says that I, the passerby, the person who just sees, am permitted to go ahead and make a bracha on your menorah. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda qualifies this. He says, Yom Rishon Harua Mavarech Beis. So Rabbi Yehuda says, therefore, on the first day of Chanukah, if you're seeing someone else's menorah, you make two brachas. But the person who's kindling makes three brachas. From this point forward, From this day forward, meaning from days 2 through 8, the one who kindles the menorah makes two brachas, and the one who sees the menorah makes one bracha. So we'll say ultimately again, what is being, which bracha disappears after the first day? So we'll say, so just to explain. So on the first night of Hanukkah, if you're kindling your own menorah, what's the halacha? You make the bracha of Shechyanu. I should say, you make the bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, Sha'asen Nisim La'Avosenu, and Shechyanu. On the first night of Chanukah, if you're just seeing the menorah but not kindling it, obviously you take away the bracha of Lahadlik. Lahadlik, right? You could only make the bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah if what? If you are kindling the menorah. But interestingly enough, if you see the menorah, you can make the bracha of Sha'asen Nisim. And on the first night, you could even make the bracha of Shechyanu. On subsequent nights, nights 2 through 8, so the madlik, the person kindling the menorah, will make the bracha of sha'asanisim, of lahadlik and sha'asanisim. But if you're just seeing the menorah and not lighting the menorah, you can't make the bracha of lahadlik, but you can make the bracha of sha'asanisim. As it says, the Gemara v'nimat nes, I don't understand. Why do you say sha'asanisim all 8 days? Why isn't sha'asanisim just like Shechyanu? Just like Shechyanu you only make on the first day, so to sha'asanisim you should only make on the first day? To which the Gemara says, no, nes kol yome isei. Ultimately, again, I will say it was a separate miracle each and every day of Chanukah. It's actually a very beautiful day, beautiful idea. The miracle of Chanukah, ultimately, again, was a miracle that occurred each and every day. Sorry, let me just each and every day. Good. Each and every day. Therefore, each day gets its own sha'asanisim. Each and every day gets its own bracha of sha'asanisim. But again, Shechyanu, which goes on the yomtiv, is bracha made only once. So the Gemara goes right there. So the Gemara says, "My mevarich." So what are the brachas that we make? Mevarich asher k'dusham esasav v'tzivaron lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. So we'll say, so the primary bracha we make is the bracha of lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. This is the birchas hamitzvah. Right? The birchas hamitzvah is baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam lahad asher k'dusham esasav v'tzivaron lahadlik ner shel Chanukah. This bracha, you commanded us to go ahead and kindle the ner Chanukah. Says the Gemara, you commanded us ve'echon sivanu. So we'll say, so understand, this is a great kasha, not just on Ner Chanukah, but on any mitzvah midrabanan, right? We make brachos on mitzvahs drabanan, rabbinic mitzvahs as well. And again, the brachos we make on mitzvahs follow a particular formulation. It is always this, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Asher Kiddushanu B'Mitzvosav V'Tzivanu. So ask the Gemara, how are you saying V'Tzivanu on a rabbinic mitzvah? God didn't command us to perform a rabbinic mitzvah, to perform Ner Chanukah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to perform Ner Chanukah. To which the Gemara says, Rav Avya Amar Milo Sasser. Rav Avya says that the Pasuk says, Lo Sasser Min HaDabar She'agidu L'chayu Min Usmol. The Torah vests the rabbis with the power to legislate new laws. And therefore, again, to a certain degree, so we'll say this is actually quite fascinating, that because the Torah goes ahead and vests the rabbis with the ability to legislate new laws and commands us to listen to Chazal, so essentially I could say Vitzivano even on a rabbinic mitzvah. Because the ability for the rabbis to tell me to do something comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to listen to the rabbis, to listen to Chazal, and therefore again, I could say Vitzivanu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to light Ner Chanukah. He didn't command us to light Ner Chanukah, but he commanded us to listen to the rabbis who told us to light Ner Chanukah. Amr Shmuel, Shmuel says from a different source, Shalavicha v'yagetcha zikinecha v'yomru lach. So Shmuel quotes over here from Ha'azinu, right? Ask your father and he will tell you, your elders and they will tell you. So Zekeinecha is a reference ultimately again to Chazal. When Chazal tell you to do something, ultimately do it. So we'll say, this happens to be fascinating on a variety of levels because the way this ultimately makes it sound almost as if every drabanan is a deoraisa. Every drabanan is a deoraisa because now what we're saying is, how can you make a bracha of Vitzivanu on Ner Chanukah? Because again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Chazal the right to legislate halacha, which then tells you that every rabbinic halacha has an element of a daraisa. So there's a lot of interesting discussion about this in the Rishonim and in the Achronim, that it's true that essentially every derabanan has some element of a daughter is attached with Maser Rav Amram. So if Rav Amram is a kasha, Hadamai Ma'arvin Bosobosai. So remember, so therefore what we're saying over here is as follows. The reason why when I light Ner Chanukah, which is a mitzvah midirabanan, yet I can make the bracha of Asher Kiddushan Vesosav V'tzivanu, I can say that God commanded me. Where did God command me? So very simply, because the Torah itself tells me that I must listen to Chazal. So because the Torah tells you that I'm supposed to listen to Chazal, therefore again, V'tzivanu. So Master Rav Amram raises the kasha. We'll say first, second white line, Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Master Rav Amram, Hadamai Ma'arvin Bo Mishtat Tfin Bo. So we'll say Demai. Demai is produce that you get from an Am Aretz, right? From someone who's unlearned. So remember again, in general, we assume that produce that comes from an Am Aretz is untithed. And therefore, again, I'm obligated to retithe it. So Hadamai Ma'arvin Bo. So we'll say you could use Demai for an Erev. And you can use it for sheet of muvaos. So just like an Eruv, remember again, a classic Eruv is not like we think about Eruv to allow people to carry. The classic Eruv the Gemara discusses is if you have multiple homes opening up into a shared courtyard. An Eruv is what allows you to carry from the individual homes into the courtyard. Mishtatvin, sheet of muvaos is the same idea. You have multiple courtyards opening up into a shared alleyway. In order to carry from the courtyards into the alleyway, you need what's called a sheet of muvaos. Okay, we'll see all this in Erevin. Umevarchin alav, you make a bracha on it. Umezan alav, you could create a zimun on demai. Umafrishin oso arum ubinashmashas. And above said, listen to this. So remember, when it comes to demai, you have to separate out trumas and maestros from your demai. And here the Brisa says that what? You could separate out trumas and maestros from demai, even if you're unclothed, and you could do it even in the twilight hours before Shabbos. Says, well, I don't understand. But if you say that anything that is midrabanan requires a bracha, hacha ki kai arum hechi mevarich. So we'll say, if you're telling me that everything that is a derabanan requires a bracha, then how does the Mishnah, how does the Braisa allow me to go ahead and separate out Shumas Meses from Demai in an unclothed state? Are you allowed to make a bracha in an unclothed state? And the answer, of course, is no. The Quran calls the Pasuk, V'hayamachanecha kadosh, your camp must be holy. Your camp must be holy. Your camp must be holy teaches me that what? That halacha lemaisa, I must maintain a level of kiddusha, ultimately, again, when it comes to making a brachos. So obviously, it must be over that you're not making a bracha on this demai. Amar Abaye, vadai de divreim bai bracha, savik de divreim lo bai bracha. So Abaye says, the only time you make a bracha on rabbinic law, I will say, is something that is definitive. But saying that is suffix does not require a bracha. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that apparently there is no bracha that is made on the separation of trumas and maestros from demai, because demai is a suffix. Remember again, at the end of the day, we don't know definitively that the Am Aretz did not tithe. We're just concerned that he did not tithe. There's a probability maybe that he did not tithe. Therefore, you have to retithe it, but you can't make a bracha on a suffix. To which the Gemara says, is that true? The Gemara says, "V'ha yomtiv sheni de safek de divreimu ubay bracha." But it says, second day yomtiv that we observe outside of Eretz Yisrael originally was instituted. Why? Because of sfeika de yoma, a doubt about the nature of the day. And yet, what? We go ahead and we make brachas throughout the entire second day yomtiv. We make kiddush. We daven shmonas. We have yomtiv filled with brachas that we're making. Rather, the Gemara says, "Rava Amar, you're right." Rava says, I'm sorry. Hasam kiyechi delo lezazuleba. People say that's because if you didn't make brachos on second day yomtiv, people would say that the whole thing is a sham. It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, in order to ensure that people keep second day yomtiv, Chazal legislated that halacha lamaisa, we make a bracha on second day yomtiv as well. Rava Amar Rava says no. Demai is something different. Rava Amar Rov ame aris ma'asrenhein. Rava will say this is actually very interesting. Rava says at the end of the day, when you purchase produce from an Am Aretz, the reason you have to retithe is not because we're afraid that there's a large Am Aretz population who's not tithing. In fact, we actually assume that probably the majority of Am Aretz do tithe. But rather, again, this is a chumrah. It's a stringency. Look at Rashi, Rava Amar, Safek de Devrein Bai Bracha. In general, even matters, even when the rabbis legislated in cases of Savig, in cases of doubt, You do make a bracha. The raya to that is Yom Tov Sheni. Yom Tov Sheni, Rabbi said, the second day Yom Tov, second day diaspora, the second day of Yom Tov in the diaspora was originally a rabbinic enactment that was there to remedy Safek. They weren't sure which day was Yom Tov. And Chazal said, make all of the brachas just like it was regular Yom Tov. So you see that Chazal do legislate brachas even in cases of Safek. The case of Demai is different. Udemai afilu Safek lohavi ela chumra ba'alma. But rather, again, the case of Demai Rabosai is not even a case of Safek. It's not the pshat that we're not sure if the Amaretz tithe. The truth is, the majority of Amaratzim, of even ignorant people, do tithe. This was a stringency. It was a chumrah. So because it was a chumrah, that's why Chazal did not legislate a bracha. So interestingly enough, Chazal will legislate a bracha in cases of doubt, but they will not legislate the brachos, ultimately, again, in cases of chumrah. The re-separating of tithes from demai is a chumrah, is a stringency, therefore no rabbinic brachos. Shabbosai, what comes out of here is a very important halachic principle, which is we make brachos on derabbanans. We make brachos on derabbanans, and not only do we make brachos on derabbanans, but what? We use the verbiage of Asher Kiddushan Mitzvosav Vitzivanu. We make it, even on rabbinic mitzvos, we say, God commanded us to perform this mitzvah. God commanded me to light Ner Chanukah. God commanded me to read the Megillah. God commanded me? The rabbis commanded me, but God commanded me to listen to the rabbis. God commanded me to listen to Chazal. As the Pasuk says, do not veer from what they tell you, right or left. Your elders will tell you what to do. So because God vested Chazal with the authority to legislate law, therefore it's Kilo HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me to even observe mitzvos derabanan. Quite a dramatic Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, Chas v'sheish labeis p'sachem tzricha shtei neros. If you have a courtyard that has two entranceways, so each entranceway requires its own Ner Chanukah. So what's a very important halacha? So remember, this is going back to the original way that they performed the mitzvah, which was kindling outside. So where did you kindle? You kindle by the entranceway of your home. So if you have a home with two entrances, you must kindle a menorah by each of those entrances. So the Gemara says, "Va'amar Rava lo amar ela mishtei ruchos." Rava says that's only true if the two entrances are in different directions. However, avamei ruach achos lo tzarech. But if you have two entrances on the same direction, you only need one menorah. My time, oh. So we'll say, what's the logic here? Ilema mishum chashadav. So we'll say, so the pashtus, what it sounds like it's saying is as follows. If I have a home and there are two entranceways, I have to light the menorah by each of the entranceways. Why? Because if people pass by my home and they know it's a Jewish home and they don't see a menorah there, what's going to happen? They're going to suspect me of not kindling the menorah. Therefore, in order to go ahead and rise above any suspicion, I should light the menorah in all of my doorways. The Gemara now is saying, is that when is that true? That's true. Not if you have two doorways in the same direction. So let's say I have two doors right next to each other. If there's a menorah in one, that clearly indicates I'm lighting the menorah. Rather, again, Rava wants to suggest that's only if, let's say, you have a north entrance and a south entrance. So in that case, you have to light the menorah by both entrances in order that there should be no suspicion. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this. Chashad deman. Who am I worried about that's going to suspect me of wrongdoing? Ilema chashad da'almo. If you want to say in general, people passing by that they might suspect I'm even near Chanukah, I feel a burach achas namely boy. Supposed to remember again, if that's the case, even if I have two entranceways on the same direction, if I'm worried about general people suspecting me, I should have to go ahead and light the menorah in every entranceway. Why? Because it was saying people pass by my home and they don't know me. So they don't know if these are two entranceways that belong to the same domicile. Or maybe even though it looks like one structure, maybe inside it's really a two-family, like the semi-homes, right? So you could look at it, it's one structure, but it's two doorways. So maybe halacha lemaisa, it's one person, maybe it's two people. So if I'm in general concerned about people, a general concern, then maybe halacha lemaaseh should have to kindle by every doorway. So the Gemara says, "Ichashadu d'bnei masa," and if it's just being concerned about my own townspeople, I feel mishnei ruchos nami lodi boy. Then Rabbi says, I shouldn't have to put menorahs even in two entranceways on two different directions. Why? Because ultimately, again, the people of my town know me. They know me, so they know that even if they don't see a menorah on the north entrance, there'll be a menorah by the southern one. To which the Gemara says, "The olam mishum chashad b'nei masa." Really, you have to kindle two menorahs in two different directions out of concern of your own townspeople. Why? Zimnin de mechalfi b'hai v'lo chalfi b'hai. Because sometimes people will only pass by one entrance, not by the other entrance. Ki heich de va'amri, and people will say, ki heich de hai pischa lo adlik b'hach pischa nami lo adlik. And people will say the same way that silver didn't light by this entrance, he also didn't light by the other entrance. So both say, therefore the Gemara teaches me that halacha l'maisa, when in fact I have two entrance ways to my home in two different directions, I am obligated to light the menorah outside by each of my doorways. Why? In order to avoid any kind of suspicion. That people should not think that chas v'shalom, I've been derelict in my responsibility to kindle the menorah. So the Gemara says, "Mina teimra dechayshin lachashad." And I will say, in general, how do I know that I have to worry about suspicion? And I will say, often there are two different like hashkafas that people adopt in life. Some people always want to live a life that is beyond reproach, and other people say, "I don't care what anyone else thinks. Right? It doesn't matter as long as I know that I'm doing the right thing. Who cares what anyone else thinks?" So, Bossy, you see from the Gemara that it is the former that is the right approach and not the latter. That apparently I do have to care what other people think, and my life must be, the way I live, must be at least externally beyond reproach. That when people see what I'm doing, I can't engage in things that even have, that even look a little bit like they might be wrong. So the Gemara says, from where do you know this, that you have to care about what other people think? That my actions cannot be even suspect in other people's eyes. So we'll say, here we go. Desanya, Amra Bishimon, Bishvil Arba Devarim Amra Torah, Laniach Peah Besolf Sadeh. Or the Torah tells me to put Peah. Remember again, Peah is the corner of the produce of my field that I must leave for the poor. Why does Peah have to be a corner? So you're supposed to leave a corner of your field. Why a corner? Why can't they leave something in the middle or somewhere else? So the Gemara says there are four reasons why it has to be a corner. Mipnei gezlaniyim, because a theft from the poor will define each of these. Mipnei bitulaniyim, mipnei achashad, umipshum bal techala. So we'll say, what does this mean? Mipnei gezlaniyim. So what is, you have to leave it in the corner so that you can't steal from the poor. How does that manifest itself? Shelo yira balabai shah pnuya, fiomer lekrovo ani harezu peya. So we'll say, what are we concerned about? You see, if you don't leave it in the corner, but you could leave it wherever you want, what are we concerned about? I'm a farmer, and I happen to have a relative who's poor. So I say to myself, you know what? I'm going to tell right now, no one else is around. I'm going to call up my poor relative. I'm going to say, come here. And I'm going to designate this spot right here as Peah. Right here as Peah. No one else is going to have access to it. I give it all to my poor relative. We don't want that. We want all the poor to have access to Peah. So therefore, what do? We make the farmer give a corner of his field. This way, every pauper knows which part of the field is going to be Peah, and the farmer himself cannot go ahead and kind of deprive the general poor population and just give it to his poor relative. Look at Rashi, Shah Pnuya, Shinaniyim, Atzlov Yom Lekrova, Ani, Maher Vitol Khan, Vitol Khan, Achlo Yavo Achirim, Ava Achsha Shavnicha, Bigmar Kitsira, Sadanim, Roman Bodhi. So we'll say, so remember again, so there's two things that's happening over here. Number one, now, so therefore, if I didn't have to designate a corner at the end of the harvest, I could easily designate some part of the field during the harvest. And I could give it all to my poor relative, but end up depriving the rest of the population of Aniyim from Peah. Therefore, Chazal legislated, you must leave a corner when, first of all, it's a corner, so it's recognizable and it's known where it is, and it must only be done at the end of the harvest. Amud Beis, Omipnei Bitul Aniyim. Furthermore, again, you have to leave a corner, right, at the end of the harvest, in order that the Aniyim should not be bottled. What does that mean? Shelo yu Aniyim Yoshin Mushamrim. So listen to this. There's another concern. If you could just designate Peah at any point in time, the Aniyim don't know when the designation is going to occur. If the Aniyim don't know when the designation is going to occur, what's going to happen? They're going to be sitting around waiting for your designation. Waiting for your designation. So therefore, Chazal said, Peah is only designated at a corner at the end of the harvest. Therefore, the Aniyim do not need to wait around, wasting time until I go ahead and decide where to designate the Peah. But I'm saying, incredible, you sold. There's nothing more precious in life than time. Than time. The ani is wholly dependent on this payah, on this corner. But even so, Chazal did not want the ani wasting his time waiting for the balabayis to decide where and when he's going to designate the payah. So therefore, what did Chazal say? Payah only comes at the end of the harvest, and it's a defined corner. This way, the ani need not waste his time sitting around. He knows when the balabayis is going to do it. Furthermore, the Gemara says, and I will say last part again because of suspicion. And I will say furthermore, Chazal legislated that you have to go ahead and designate the specific corner at the end of the harvest. What else are we concerned about? Because I will say, let's say, imagine you could just designate any part of your crop at any point in time. So you go ahead and you didn't begin the harvest, and you say, you know what, this area right here, this is payah. So let's say you do your obligation, you fulfill your obligation, the aniyim come, but no one else saw that. So people pass by your field, they see that you haven't demarcated any area for the poor. Now meanwhile, you've actively already given the poor, but people don't see it, and they're going to say what? A curse should come upon this person who is so stingy and he's not sharing of his produce with the poor. So in order to avoid suspicion, Chazal legislated that payah is only left at the end of the harvest, and it is a specific corner that is left. So you see from here that what? You see from here that you must be concerned ultimately again with people suspecting you of wrongdoing. And lastly, umishum bal techala, and I will say, and ultimately, in order that you not go ahead and harvest your field in its entirety, but you leave some portion for the poor, to which the Gemara says, atu, lav, atu kulu lav mishum bal techala. I will say, all of these are because bal techala means that where the Torah tells me explicitly that halacha lemaisa ubechutzur kam eskitzi artzechem lo sechala pasad chaliktzur. Torah tells me don't harvest your field in its entirety, rather leave a corner for the poor. So we'll say this is the motivation for everything we've spoken about right now. Twitch the Marzah Rava bim neharamon. Rava says no, this is to go ahead and prevent against the Ramain are literally, again, treacherous ones, dishonest people. Dishonest people who will say, oh, I already gave at the office, right? I already gave my payah. Right? I already gave payah. Yeah, you just missed it. So we'll say, in order to prevent anyone from saying they already gave, when in fact that they didn't, Chazal legislated the giving of payah in a certain way. So bottom line, for the purposes of our sugya, what do you see from here? You see that Chazal said that when you give payah, there are two important factors. Number one, that payah be given at the end of the harvest, and that payah be given from a defined corner. There are multiple reasons for that, but the reason that's most important for us is why? Ultimately, again, so a person should rise above suspicion. That anyone who passes by my field, they should be able to see that I am giving my appropriate corner of produce to the poor, and no one should suspect me of holding back the tithes for the poor for myself. So what do you see from here? You see from here that ultimately, again, a person's behavior must rise above suspicion. So tying this back, that's why by Ner Chanukah, if you have entrance ways to your home in different directions, you must light a Ner Chanukah by each of the separate entrance ways. That way, again, no matter where a person passes by, they will see the Ner Chanukah. Now, if you have multiple entrance ways on the same directions, let's say your house faces north, you have three entrance ways. There, you only need one Ner Chanukah. But let's say you have a north entrance or a south entrance. So halacha lemaisa, again, you would put the Ner Chanukah by each of those entrances to avoid any level of suspicion. I will say this, of course, is talking about when they were lighting Ner Chanukah outside. This does not apply to how we light Ner Chanukah in the diaspora today, inside the home. But I will say what it does teach us is something really amazing of this concept of the Yisem Nikiyim, that the way we should live a life in a way that all of our actions are beyond reproach. You know, someone once told me that a good way to look at this is if they were to put your life on the front page of the New York Times, make sure that anything that they're reporting on ultimately, again, is beyond reproach. It's a hard way to live because it demands an incredible level of mitzuyonos, of excellence on our part. But that's the Gemara says, make sure the way that we live our lives is beyond reproach. If anyone were to look at any one thing that we do, ultimately my actions would stand on their own and they would be beyond reproach. Pretty incredible. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Difa, Amar Rav Huna. Ner sheyishla shnei pios. So we'll see that's very interesting. If you have a candle that has two wicks, literally means it has two wicks, Ola lebeis bnei adam. So ultimately, again, it could work for two people. So just you can imagine this. So remember, when they say ner, when they say a candle, remember that's actually a reference to the receptacle that held the oil. So if you have a receptacle that holds the oil, and then again, the receptacle, let's say, has two lips, right? And each lip, or even two lips in one direction, and each lip holds a wick. That one wick, that one ner could count for two people. I should say each wick counts for one person. Remember, the Iker Mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is one candle per person per home. So ideally, so therefore, if you have one ner that holds two wicks, that could count for two people. That could count for two people. The Gemara says, "All the bays in the Adam." Suppose say, you know, there's an incredible muster in this also. Suppose say, so the ner, right? The ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The ner represents an individual. So what does the Gemara say? Ner sheyesh lo shnei pios ola lebnei adam. You never say, ultimately, again, sometimes the way we talk, it makes us look like we have split personalities, right? I talk such beautiful words of Torah, and at the same time, sometimes I could talk such negative things as well, whether it's Lashon Hara, Rechilos, Nivul Peh, whatever it might be. So sometimes we both say it's amazing how Ner Shiyesh L'Shnei Pios, one Ner, could act like he has two mouths. And those two mouths ultimately what? Make him look like two people. That sometimes we live life with such profound inherent inconsistencies that it looks like we're spiritually schizophrenic, right? That it looks like, oh, I'm learning Daf Yomi and I'm one person. And then I go out to the world and I'm a different person. The goal, Rabbi Osei, is to be one ner with one peh. One, right? One ner with one wick and one peh. So then the greatest challenge in life is, I have shtei pios, ola lishnei b'nei adam. I speak with two mouths. And those two mouths, right? Those two mouths ultimately, again, make me look like two people. And Rabbi Osei, this is the famous Medrash that says, the Moshe Abinu petition HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give people two mouths. One mouth for Torah and one mouth for everything else. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, it doesn't work that way. You get one mouth. And the goal ultimately is to make that mouth Kaddish, not just when you learn, but to make that mouth Kaddish even when you have to engage in worldly matters as well. Amar Rava, Mirei Ka'ara Shemen V'Kifa Psilo, so only if you have a bowl, and you fill the bowl with oil, and you put a bunch of wicks in the bowl, what's the halacha? So the kafale kli ol lekam b'nei adam. So if you place a utensil over the wicks, which means if you can imagine, this is a utensil with holes. So therefore, again, each wick comes out of a different hole, then halacha l'maisa, ol lekam b'nei adam, beautiful. Each wick, therefore, becomes an independent ner, and each ner, ultimately, again, could serve to fulfill the obligation of individuals. Lo kafale kli, but if you did not go ahead and put the utensil on top of the bowl, asak min medura. Then Rabbi said, that bowl of oil with a bunch of wicks becomes like a bonfire. Vafilu le'echad nami eina ola. And Rabbi said, you know, the halacha is, if something is a bonfire, it doesn't even work to fulfill the Ner Chanukah obligation of one person. Ner Chanukah is a ner, it's a candle. It's not a bonfire. So interestingly enough, if you have a bowl filled with oil and you put a bunch of wicks in it, if you put a kli on top of it so that each of the wicks are separate, beautiful. Multiple people could fulfill their obligation with that. But if you go ahead and you leave it uncovered, then it's just a big bowl with oil and wicks, that's called a bonfire. And with a bonfire, even one person doesn't fulfill his obligation. Beautiful. Amar Rava, we'll say beautiful Gemara here. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bidvaro. Amar Rava, we'll say beautiful Gemara. Pshitali, ner beis ov ner chanukah, ner beis ov adam. Both listen to this. This is talking about a case of a poor person. Person only has enough money, either for ner beis ov ner chanukah. Ner beis ov, I'll say over here, is a reference to Shabbos. Right? So I have a choice between purchasing candles for Shabbos or for Chanukah. Only have enough money for one. So which one wins? So what's the halacha? Ner beis adif. Shabbos candles are more important than Chanukah candles. Why? Mishum shalom bayis. Because we'll say ultimately again, why do you like Shabbos candles? Because of shalom bayis. Rabbi said, now what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Shalom beiso, v'hachi aminon lekamon, v'tiznach mishalom nafshi zu hadlakas ner Shabbos, shebenei b'nei beiso, mitztan le'she b'choshes. Rabbi said, lest you think over here that when we say that you light Shabbos candles for shalom bayis, that this is some beautiful, esoteric, spiritual idea, that when you light ner Shabbos, there's going to be shalom bayis. It's very simple. I'll say, if it's dark in your house and you slam your foot against the wall, nothing is worse, first of all, for your nivelpeh, as well as for your shalom bayis, right? Then bumping into stuff, sitting in the dark, v'chulei v'chulei. So therefore, I will say, when we say that Ner Shabbos is for shalom bayis, what we just mean is people are generally happier when they are sitting in a well-illuminated home. It's good for your relationship, yes. So it's good for your relationship with your spouse. It's good for your relationship with your children. It's good for your relationship with God. It's good for your relationship with everyone when you're not bumping into things. General klal gadol. So therefore, the Gemara says, if you have a choice between only having enough money to buy near Chanukah, money for near Chanukah, or near Shabbos, you buy near Shabbos. Because that's cultural and bias. Near Beis of the Kiddush Hayom. So we'll see, interesting enough, what happens if there's only enough money for Shabbos candles or for Kiddush on Shabbos? What do you buy? Ner Beis Ha'at Mishum Shalom Bayis. So we'll say, so too over here, you go ahead and you use your money to purchase candles for Shabbos, even more than Kiddush. Now we'll say, that has to do with, that's actually a little bit easier to understand also. Why? Because Halacha L'maisa, you could always fulfill the obligation of Kiddush in Tefillah, right? In davening. Even, by the way, with Ner Chanukah, we saw before, there's another way to fulfill Ner Chanukah. How do you fulfill Ner Chanukah? You could actually make a bracha on someone else's candles as well. So if you have a choice between Ner Shabbos, Ner Chanukah, Ner Shabbos. A choice between Ner Shabbos and Kiddush, Ner Shabbos. Why? Because Shalom Bayis, the ability to illuminate the home, trumps everything else. By Rava, Ner Chanukah v'Kiddush Hayom Mahu. So we'll say, what happens if you only have enough money for Ner Chanukah and Kiddush? Ner Chanukah or Kiddush? Chanukah candles or Kiddush? Which one should I do? Mau Kiddush Hayom Adev Tetadir. So do we say Kiddush is more important because it comes more frequently? And in general, whenever you have a choice between two mitzvos, we look at whichever one occurs with greater frequency. Tadir v'sheino tadir, tadir kol demon, whichever occurs with greater frequency is the one that you do. Odilma, or perhaps we'll say, Ner Chanukah Adif Mishum Pirsume Nisa. Or maybe Ner Chanukah should be more important. Why? Because I will say Ner Chanukah has an element of Pirsum HaNes. Ner Chanukah has an element of publicity. And wherever you have publicity, right, and a mitzvah with publicity is always more important than a mitzvah without publicity. To which the Gemara says, Basar di bayahad pashta, Ner Chanukah adif mishum pirsumi nisa. Ultimately, again, it's very interesting, if you only have enough money for Ner Chanukah or for Kiddush, ultimately, again, you will go ahead and use the money for Ner Chanukah, because since Ner Chanukah is an element of piercement, it's a publicizing the miracle, therefore it has a greater chashivos, a greater importance. Now, the backdrop to all of this is, because remember also, you could always go ahead and fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush through tefillah. Beautiful. Amar Rav Huna, say beautiful Gemara. Harogil b'ner, havin lahu lei banim tamid yacham. Now, say if a person is very careful with the mitzvah of Ner. Now, I say, now the pashtos, what this means is both Ner Shabbos as well as Ner Chanukah. Anyone who is careful with the mitzvah of Neros, Ner Shabbos, Ner Chanukah, kindling Shabbos candles, kindling Chanukah candles, will be zochet to have children who are Talmid Yechachamim. Quite beautiful. Now, we'll say, so just to understand what's the logic behind that. So we'll say, on a deeper level, right, so what it's saying over here is, Haragil B'ner means a person who is consistent in bringing spiritual illumination into his life. We'll say, we all know that the secret, well, I don't know what the secret is, but they say, potentially, that the secret to raising inspired children has nothing to do with what you tell your kids, and everything for the behaviors you model for them. Model the right, so Haragil B'ner means someone who lives a spiritually illuminated life. Ragil B'ner means it's ragil, it's normal for me to be inspired. It's ragil for me to be spiritually illuminated. And that's what my kids see day in and day out. My children see a parent, my children see a father, my children see someone who's their primary Rebbe, who is constantly on fire, who's constantly illuminated, who's constantly spiritually awakened. So if you live a life like that, havin lei banan tamei dechachamim, you will have children who value Torah. If you value Torah and you live a life of spiritual luminescence and spiritual illumination, then you'll be zochet to have children who love Torah as well. Listen to this. Hazar b'mezuzah, if one is careful with the mitzvah mezuzah, zochet l'dira. And I want to say something about this also. You know, whenever you see these gemaras that if you act a certain way, you are privileged to go ahead and have children who will be great. So people often always think, It's just the Ha'ari. You can feel free to disagree with it. But I think people often think that this is great if you learn these Gemaras when your kids are young. Right? So if I learn this when my kids are young, then I have a chance to impact my children. Let's say we all know parents have an impact on their children, even when their children are adult children, no longer living in the house. At the end of the day, our primary role models in life are always our parents. And a lot of us know this is true even when we grow up. We still look to our parents for an incredible amount of guidance. So yes, when you see a Gemara like this, if you have young kids, the message is obvious. Lead an inspired life. Be a person who's a ner. Be a person who's a constantly illuminated candle. Because if you live a life of spiritual inspiration and luminescence, you will inspire your children to do the same. But even if your children are grown and out of the house, if your children see you living a life of inspiration, your children see you learning, your children see you as someone who's dedicating your life to Yiddishkeit, your children see you as a ner, never underestimate the impact that has even on adult children. Next, Hazar ben Mezuzah. A person goes in and is careful with the mitzvah mezuzah. Zoche ledira noe. Very beautiful. If you're careful with the mitzvah mezuzah, you will be privileged to have a beautiful home. So we'll say, what does this mean? That if you're careful with mezuzah, you have a beautiful home. We'll say, what it's meaning is like this. If a person looks at his gashmius, a person looks at his material possessions as a way of furthering his ruchnius. So you're about to say, see, some people, the beauty of Yiddishkeit is we're not an ascetic religion. Right? We don't believe that the only pathway to God is to swear off materialism. That's actually easy. There's much hard. What we have is much more difficult. We understand that materialism is an avenue to God as well, as long as you lift it up. So the shaila is, how do you relate to your materialism? Do you relate to your material items as another avenue to God or not? So if you do, then halacha lemaisa, every material item offers you an avenue of connection. So a person has a beautiful home. So what do you use your home for? So if you use your home, one of the things you use your home for is the ability to fulfill the mitzvah of mezuzah, then that is a person who's lifting up his gashmius into the service of ruchnius. So therefore, a person who's careful with mezuzah will have a beautiful home, which means a person who uses his materialism to further his ruchnius will be blessed with even greater materialism. Similarly, Hazar b'tzitzis, zocha l'tasna, same idea. Person is careful with tzitzis, he'll have beautiful clothing. We'll say, what does that mean? Same idea. A person who uses his gashmius as a way to further his ruchnius, person who uses his material items as a way to further his spiritual relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is blessed with greater materialism. Hazar b'kiddush hayom, zocha u'memali gar b'yayin. So we'll say, it's great. If you're careful, if you are meticulous with kiddush, you will be blessed with barrels of wine. Barrels of wine. And by the way, good wine, right? Good. I don't mean like Malaga, right? This is nothing with a screw top, right? So we'll say you're going to be blessed ultimately again with barrels of wine. What's right? What's the pshat? It's all the same idea. If you use your gashmius in a way that furthers your ruchnius, say HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fantastic, I'll give you more gashmius. People are saying, when does gashmius become a problem? Materialism becomes a problem when you use it to distance yourself from God. But if a person uses every material item that he has as a way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, beautiful. That's the tachlis of materialism. Materialism is beautiful. Materialism is wonderful as long as it's used to create bridges to God, and not, God forbid, used to create divides from God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu assures us, if you use it in the right way, not only will I be happy with you, but I'll give you more of it. Incredible. Rav Huna of a Ragil, Tavachalef Atani HaPischa Debe Abi Avin Nagra. So let's listen to this. Rav Huna often used to go ahead and pass by the entranceway of the home of Rabbi Avin Nagra, Rabbi Avin the carpenter. And he said, Rabbi Avin was very careful with Neros Shabbos and Neros Chanukah. Amar Tregavi Ravabe Nafkimiach. And he said, this man, Rabbi Avin, is going to have two great sons who come from him. He's careful with the candles of Shabbos and the candles of Chanukah. He's going to have two pious sons. And sure enough, who were Rabbi Avin's sons? Nafkiminahu, Rabbi Ivi Bar Avin, Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin. So we'll say the Gemara understands that in the merit of his meticulousness with Ner Shabbos and Ner Chanukah. Again, I'll both say, internalizing that lesson of living a life of spiritual luminescence and inspiration, he was privileged to have two great sons. Rav Chista Havaragel Davatani Havaragel Davachalif Atani Apescha De Beinasha to Rav Shizvi. So I'll say so one time. So Rav Chista, excuse me, Rav Chia Bar Avin. I'm sorry. Rav Chista often used to pass by the entranceway of the house of the father of Rav Shizvi. So Chazad the Havaragel Bishragi Tuva, and he saw that Rav Shizvi's father was very careful with candles, very makbid. So we'll say this is in the singular. So either means Neiros Shabbos, Neiros Chanukah, Pashas, Neiros Shabbos. Amar Gavra Rabba Nafik Mihacha. This man will have a great son. Sure enough, Nafik Minayu Rav Shizvi. Ultimately, Rav Shizvi came from this home. So we'll say, so the Gemara is just giving examples of this, of people who were in fact meticulous with the mitzvos of Ner, and we'll say, not just the kindling of the candles. As we said before, we're meticulous with the external kindling, but the internal kindling, right? Kindle yourself, hadlaka osa mitzvah, live a life of inspiration, let your children see that, create a home like that, and you will have inspired children. So the Gemara tells a different story. Divisid Rav Yosef, have ma'achra madlak eslas. What's very interesting, the wife of Rav Yosef would often go ahead and light Shabbos candles late. Now I will say, not because she was running late. This is very interesting. She wanted to show that the candles she was lighting were lekavod Shabbos. And so she thought that the way to really show that they were lekavod Shabbos was how? To light them as close to Shabbos as possible. So she would wait literally until the moments before it became dark, so it should be clear that the candles she was lighting was lekavod Shabbos. Amar la Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says to her, you know, Tanya, we learned, lo yamush amud ha'anan yomam va'amud ha'esh layla. Milame sha'amud anan mashlim la'amud ha'esh va'amud ha'esh mashlim la'amud ha'anan. So we'll say, so Rav Yosef said to us something so beautiful. He taught her a halacha, or taught her a concept. So we know that when the Jews were in the desert for 40 years, so ultimately, again, there was a cloud by day and a fire by night. So the Torah tells us something amazing. So the cloud never left them by day, and the fire never left them by night. So what the Gemara says is like this. When nightfall would come, the fire would first come before the cloud departed. And in the morning, the cloud would come before the fire departed. The idea is that Klal Yisrael was never without anything. So there was a few moments where there would be overlap, ultimately, again, between the cloud and the fire. There were moments where they were both there together. So I will say what he was telling her ultimately was as follows. He was telling her that you see from here that the fire came when the cloud was still there. So the fire would come even when it was still day. So he was telling her, you don't have to wait so late to light Shabbos candles, but rather you could even light the Shabbos candles while it's still a little bit earlier, and it'll still be recognizable that what? That halacha lemaisa, it's for Shabbos. It was saying, I just want to tell you something amazing. You learn something very important from this Gemara about how to speak to your wife. See, Rabbi Yosef, could have come along and said, what you're doing is wrong. You know, why are you waiting so late to light Shabbos candles? Why are you waiting so late? Right? What are you doing? He said, what does he do? He doesn't say anything. What does he do? He teaches her halacha. He tells her a piece of information, and we'll see that she gleaned it from herself. We'll say, you know, sometimes our significant others, this applies from husband to wife and from wife to husband, but I'm talking to a group of husbands. It appears at least on the screen, so I'll say it like this. You know, so sometimes, again, a spouse has to say, I think what you're doing is wrong. There's a way to say it. There's a way to say it. And the way to say it almost never contains the words, I think what you're doing is wrong. Never those words. There's a way to talk, especially with someone who's your partner in life. Sometimes you have to say something because you feel like your basheret might be doing something wrong. There's a way to say it. And there's a way to say it without making a person feel silly or foolish or dumb. And there's a way to say it without a person feeling like they're being preached to or being put down. Who do you see? Remember what I was saying? Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef could have easily said to his wife, why are you waiting so late to light Shabbos candles? You should light earlier. And said, what does he do? He shares with her a Dvar Torah. He tells her a Vart. And she hears the Vart. She says, you know what? Good. You're right. I didn't realize that the fire already came when the cloud was still there. The fire came ultimately while it was still day. So I should light Shabbos candles earlier. So I'll say, so what happened? So Savalak Duma. So ultimately, again, so therefore, what happened? I'll say, she was saying, this is great. I'm going to go ahead and light candles much earlier. So she said, here I'm always waiting until the last minute. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to start to light candles much, much earlier. So therefore, Amr Lahu Saba. So I'll say, so now watch this. An old man came to her. and told her, Tanina, ubilbat shlo yakdim shlo yacher. This old man came to her and told her, but you know, you really shouldn't go ahead and light too early in the day, because we'll say, obviously, if you're lighting too early in the day, then what? Then halacha lamais, that's not clear as l'kavod Shabbos. So the Maharsha says, who was the Saba? It was Eliyahu HaNavi. It was Eliyahu HaNavi. So Rabbi say, what do you see from here? So we'll say, where was Rav Yosef? So remember, at this point in time, so she heard the Dvar, right? She heard the Dvar Torah. So her husband tells her the Dvar Torah, right? Don't have to light so late. So she hears, so she starts lighting so early. So we'll say, so what happens? What happens? So we'll say, everybody knows this. So you tell your spouse something. Let's say he or she, right? So she's Mekabalit. So she changes. But then, in this case, she did something still that was wrong. She was lighting too early. So what is Rabbi Yosef going to do over here? He's going to tell her again, now it's too early. Mostly there comes a certain point in time where a spouse becomes resentful if you're constantly giving feedback. So I said, what do you see from here? Who says, Masha, who was the Saba? Saba was Eliyahu HaNavi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Eliyahu HaNavi to Rabbi Yosef's wife to tell her, by the way, you're lighting too early. What do you see from here? You see from here that if you try really hard in your Shalom Bayis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help you out. Poor Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, what am I going to say now? My wife now stopped lighting so late. Now she's lighting too early. What am I going to do? I'm going to go back now and tell her, by the way, I love you so much, but come on. Come on. Right? Really? Now we're lighting this early? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Rav Yosef, you put in the proper hishtalas, the proper efforts for your Shalom Bayis. This is worth sending Eliyahu HaNavi for. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Eliyahu HaNavi and tells Mrs. Rav Yosef, by the way, you're lighting a bit too early. Lighting a bit too early. And above us, we know that this is halacha lemaisa. So halacha lemaisa teaches us ultimately so much about our shalom bayis. Above us, about how to speak to our spouses. How do you speak to a spouse? Sometimes you have to say what you're doing is incorrect, but you never say what you're doing is incorrect. There is a way to talk to your partner in life. And it's never condescending. It's never preaching. You're not your wife's parent. You're not your wife's mashkiach. You're a partner. And there's a way to talk to a partner where you have to point out that something is wrong, but at the same time, talking to that partner, that most significant partner, in a way that does not chas v'shalom diminish them or put them down. Sometimes you share information. And when you share information, your significant other figures it out. And ultimately, again, if you put in your hishtadlus for your shalom bayis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you even by dispatching Eliyahu HaNavi. Rabbi said, Leil HaSeder, some people open the door because they need Eliyahu HaNavi to bring Mashiach. Some people open the door because they need Eliyahu HaNavi for their shalom bayis. Some people open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi for a variety of different reasons. But he helps us out in all kinds of ways. But halacha lemaisa, what we also see from here is, you do not wait until it gets too late to light Shabbos candles. The earliest you could light Shabbos candles on Friday afternoon is Plag Mincha, is an hour and a quarter before Shkia. That's the earliest time for Hadlakas Neros. Both say we'll stop over here. We're not yet, so we're going to continue our session with the rest of the Parakim and Meligim. I want to tell you we have some beautiful, beautiful, magnificent datim ahead of us in the coming days. Yashikach, wishing everyone an incredible and wonderful day ahead. Shkaya Chavosai.